So what if I told you at the age of 17, some of you that's coming up, some of you that's right now, some of you need to bear with me and think back to when that was. But what if I told you by the age of 17 that you would be the favorite of 12 brothers? That you would have really, really cool clothes? That you would have these crazy prophetic dreams from God? And you would have a high position in one of the most powerful empires in the world, and that you would have God's presence and you would be successful at everything you do. Sounds pretty cool. But also, what if at the same time your brothers hate you and they want to kill you because you're spoiled, and you'll be thrown into a pit and likely left for dead? You'll be sold into slavery, and then you'll get thrown into prison. That part of things doesn't sound quite as good as the first list, and I think I would pick the first list, but not so much the second. But this is the life of Joseph in the Old Testament. And it's a life that has a lot of ups and downs. It's a life that has good times and bad times. It's a life of success, and it's a life of failure. That sound like anybody else's life in here? Does anybody else's life have some ups and downs? There's good times and bad times. There's success, there's failure. I think we can all relate to that, and we can relate to Joseph in a lot of ways. Has anybody ever read anything by C.S. Lewis or seen The Chronicles of Narnia? Yeah. Oh, wow. So C.S. Lewis wrote this book called The Screwtape Letters that I really like, and if you've never read it, you should. But I'm not going to explain the whole book to you, but basically he sets up this idea that he calls the law of undulation. Now, I don't expect you to know what that word means, but basically it means the law of ups and downs. And he talks about how life is inevitably, no matter what, it's going to have ups and downs. That's just the way life is. And he talks about how God, I think this is true, God makes us more like himself, and he makes us more like Jesus in the low times than he does in the high times. It's because it's in the low times when we really have to have faith. And it's in the low times that we really have to rely on God and trust his promises. And as a result, it's in the low times, when we're in the valley or when we're in the pit, is when God really makes us like himself. And you've probably had some low times in life too. I've had a couple. There's something that probably a lot of you guys don't know about me, and I don't go around and parade it, but I was the quarterback of my high school football team. And some of you are like, what the heck? No way. What? What are you talking about? You don't think there's any way that could have been me. But it was. I even have photographic evidence to prove it. yeah, that is me. Like epic in the rain, number 7, the quarterback. Yeah, glory days to the max, right? This is me. So this is a cool picture. That was my senior year of high school. That was the first game of the year, and it was really cool. It was awesome. It was epic. We were playing our rival, and we won the game. And it was really cool. It was raining, and anyway, they should make a movie about it. Okay, but the very next week after this game, the second game of my senior year. For all my football people out there, I was running a speed option, so I had the football, and I was running, and you know, I broke a few tackles, of course. But then I got tackled and kind of drug down from behind, and I was laying there. There were people on top of me. I was like, man, my knee kind of hurts. And then I rolled over, and then when I did, I felt this terrible feeling that nobody should ever have to feel. And then I looked down. Maybe this is a little too graphic, but my leg was literally going the wrong way. And it was in that moment, and it's still like the images. It was one of those times where it was traumatizing, and I can hardly do anything athletic anymore without those images and those pictures coming back into my mind of what happened. So that was my the mark, kind of my athletic career when I was in high school. And it was in the moment of the low times that I experienced God shaping me in ways that I never thought I would or he could. And it was in those moments where people expected me to be really down. And people expected me to curse God and to not have a clue why something like this would happen, because I was probably going to go play, you know, sports somewhere, college, all that thing. But God used it to lead me in a different direction. He used it to shape me, because in the moments where I couldn't walk for like 4 months, I rode a little scooter around school, and it was in those times when I was able to point more people to Jesus because of the peace and the joy that I was able to have, not because of anything I did, but because of what God did in my life. Those times and those few months, God shaped me more than any other period of my life, because it was one of the lowest times in my life, but it was also ended up being one of the most joyful. And so God uses those low times to shape us in ways that we can't even imagine. He's got a bigger plan and he's got a purpose. And we've been tracing it through the Bible of all the things that happened to all these people. And there's a point and there's a purpose to it all. And there's a lot we can learn about Joseph's life, from Joseph's life, about ourselves and about God and the way he works and who he is and his character. And as we read Joseph's story, I want you to think about Joseph's actions, what he did. Did he deserve what he got? Was he just a spoiled brat, or was God doing something there? Did he deserve it? The good things or the bad things? And how did he react? How did he respond to the things that happened to him, the good things and the bad things? Did he respond negatively and curse God? Was he confused? Do we see how Joseph responded? And I want you to try and put yourself in Joseph's shoes as we read. We're going to be in Genesis 37, and if you have your Bibles, you should turn there, because we're going to be going through it and reading about the life of Joseph. And we're going to start with verse 2. It says this: "These are the generations of Jacob." You can follow along on the screen. "These are the generations of Jacob." Jacob was Joseph's dad. "Joseph, being 17 years old," here we go, 17-year-old, "was pasturing the flock with his brothers." So he was a shepherd, 17-year-old. "He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah," sweet names, "his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father." So Joseph comes and he tattletales on his brothers. And we don't know, some people think he made it up. It was something false that he said to his dad about his brothers. And we really don't know, but we do know that he brought a bad report of them. So just take it as it is. Now Israel, that's Jacob's other name, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons. So Joseph's the favorite because he was the son of his old age. And we really don't know exactly what that means, but we do know that Joseph was born to Rachel, who was Jacob's wife, whom he loved. She was beautiful. He was the one that he worked 7 years for, and then got the wrong wife, really weird story. And then he worked another 7 years and then had to work some more to get the wife that he actually wanted. And Joseph was born to her, Rachel. So we know that he was the son of the one who Jacob loved. And he made him a robe of many colors. Here's those sweet clothes that I was talking about. Made him a robe of many colors. He created this thing to set Joseph apart so everybody would know that he is the favorite son. It would have been a really cool tunic thing that would have long sleeves. I don't really know how else to describe it, but it was a robe of many colors. "But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him." So his brothers hated Joseph for being the favorite. Did Joseph ask to be the favorite? Not necessarily. Was he completely innocent? Not necessarily. But nonetheless, this is Joseph's plight. And they hated him. Strong language. They hated his brother, and they couldn't speak peacefully to him. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. That's what that reminds me of. Now, verse 5. "Now Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more." Wow. "He said to them, 'Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field." That's like a bundle of whatever they were harvesting. "And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf. His brother said to him, are you indeed to reign over us, or are you indeed to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Joseph just had a dream and he wanted to tell his brothers about it. It doesn't say that he was trying to interpret it. Bless you. He was trying to interpret it. He didn't do anything in order to put himself above his brothers. He just told them what the dream was, and his brothers interpreted it. They took it for what it was, and they hated him even more. There's a lot of hatred for this kid. Then he dreamed another dream, and told it to his brothers and said, behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me. But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall I, your mother, and your brothers indeed come to bow down, to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. And so he has another dream, and he tells it to his dad, and his dad doesn't hate him like his brothers do. He rebukes him. He's like, seriously? But then he kept it in mind because he knew that God speaks through dreams, and this time it was a way that God spoke to people. And so Jacob kept it in mind. He's like, I think there's something to that. And so we see more jealousy from the brothers, more hatred from the brothers. So the Bible's setting this up like they really do not like Joseph. And so in verses 12 through 17, I'm not going to read it verse for verse, but I'm going to tell you what happened. Jacob sends Joseph on a 50-mile journey to go find his brothers and check on them because they're shepherding the flock. Now, I don't know why Jacob thought that sending his son alone to go find the other sons that hate him 50 miles away was a good idea, but he did it anyway. Maybe he didn't understand that there was some family tension going on. We really don't know, but we do know that he sent him on a journey to go and find his brothers. So we pick up the story in verse 18. It says, they saw him from afar. Any idea how they could have recognized Joseph coming? And before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. So they saw him. They're like, here he comes. It's go time. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Strong sarcasm there if you didn't get it. Strong sarcasm in the Bible. Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him. And we will see what will become of his dreams. We'll see how do you like your dreams now, Joseph? But when Reuben heard it, Reuben is the oldest of all the brothers, by the way. He rescued him out of their hands, saying, let us not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. And so Reuben probably had ulterior motives going on here. Maybe he was taking responsibility as the oldest, and maybe he wanted to take Joseph back to Jacob for himself so he could be the favorite. There's some other things going on with Reuben, but there's a lot of sarcasm here. And he said, how do you like your dreams now, Joseph? How are you going to like your dreams whenever we kill you? So much jealousy, so much hatred going on. And just this language here where he said they stripped him, that's the language elsewhere used in the Bible as like skinning an animal. And the language that they use when it says that they threw him into the pit, the other place that's used is when they're talking about burying a dead body and putting a dead body in a grave. So you see how strong the language is? You see how strong the hatred is from his brothers? So they wanted to throw him, they dumped him like a dead body. In verse 25, we pick it back up. Then they sat down to eat. They leave their brother for dead, and then they're just going to have dinner. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not let our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. Then Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took him to Egypt. And so Judah's like, hey, I think we can make some money off the kid. Let's not kill him. Let's sell him into slavery. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And now I want you to pause for a second and think about, like, when we hear the story of the brothers and you're thinking, man, these guys really, they're really jealous of this kid and they really hate him. I don't want you to think that you're so far away from the brothers and their actions. Because how many of you, and I'm talking about myself here because I've done this multiple times, how many of you see somebody that has something that you want? Maybe they have a certain status and a certain popularity. Maybe they're better at sports or something than you are. I do this a lot. They're better at whatever you want to be, and maybe something happens to them and you kind of like, yes. Has anybody ever done that? Have you ever been jealous of somebody and then something happens to them and then you're like, you kind of like fist pump to yourself? Essentially, that's what's going on here. Now, maybe you don't plot to kill them or throw them into a pit or have them sold into slavery, but really we're not far away. We're not far away from Joseph's brothers, because we have, when we harbor jealousy and we harbor hatred in our hearts, just like they did, and you can see how far jealousy and hatred and anger can go. We have to rid ourselves of that. So anyway, Joseph sold into slavery. And then the end, 29 through 36, finish out the chapter. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, the boy is gone, and I, where shall I go? They took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. I think of like CSI or like Criminal Minds. Like, will you identify this as your son's robe? And he identified it and said, it is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Remember, that was their plan in the first place. They wanted people to think that an animal devoured him. They didn't have to say anything. Mission accomplished. It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. They tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. Meanwhile, skip down to 36, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Meanwhile, he's sold into slavery, and he's in the house of a leader of Egypt, one of Pharaoh's top dudes, the captain of the guard. And so far, Joseph's life is marked with lies, with deceit, and with jealousy. Sounds like high school. Lies, deceit, and jealousy. And what did Joseph do to deserve it? He wasn't innocent completely. No, he said bad things about his brothers to his dad. But like I said before, he didn't ask to be the favorite son. And what we're going to see throughout the rest of Joseph's life is how God has a plan, how God is present, and how God is faithful. God has a plan, God's present, and God is faithful to Joseph in his life. In chapter 39, flip over the page if you're following along. In 39, now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, has bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Check this out. The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of the house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer of the house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. And that's basically saying that he didn't care about anything. Joseph was so good at his job, and the Lord was with him so much. This guy didn't care about anything except whether he was going to have the filet mignon or the chicken cordon bleu that night. He did not care about anything because Joseph was so good at his job because the Lord was with him and the Lord caused him to be successful. I wonder, have you ever met anybody that you're like, that person has the presence of the Lord and is walking with God? Have you ever met anybody like that, that you're just like drawn to them and you want to put them in charge of everything that you have because they're so good? That's basically Joseph. And so now the story's going to take another turn. So he's gone from the favorite, and then he's gone to searching for 50 miles for his brothers. They plot to kill him. They throw him in a pit. They decide, we'll sell him into slavery. Now he's in slavery. Then he gets put in charge of Potiphar's house and everything that he has. And then Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him multiple times. She's throwing herself at him. Joseph continually says no. And then one time she grabbed like his shirt, like his cloak thing, and says, come here. And then he says, nope. And then he takes it off and then runs. Seriously. Read the Bible. It's in there. Chapter 39. Read it. He left the clothes that she grabbed him by. And then she lied and said, Joseph tried to come in here. He tried to seduce me. And she had his clothes as evidence. And so she tells all of the people that were working there, all the servants, and then she also tells her husband what happened, which didn't actually happen. And as a result, Potiphar's obviously very angry and then throws him into jail. Quite the turn of events. From going to overseer of everything that Potiphar owns, he's having a great time. He's awesome at his job. The Lord's with him. He's making him successful. And then somebody else lies about something when he was in the right the whole time. And he gets thrown into jail. Then Joseph gets put in charge of everything that goes on in the prison because he's so awesome and the Lord is with him. So we see favorite at home, sent out on a 50-mile journey, thrown into a pit to be killed, sold into slavery, put in charge of a lot of Egypt, thrown in jail, put in charge of that jail. So that's Joseph's life so far. Quite a turn of events, a lot of ups and downs. In chapter 39, twice it says the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. And so how Joseph also had an awesome reaction to the thought of giving in to Potiphar's wife, giving in to the master's wife. This is his response. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? The thought of indulging in that adultery and giving in to her requests was absolutely disgusting to Joseph. And when you're walking with the Lord hand in hand, whenever you're close, whenever you have an intimacy with God, the thought of sin like repels you and drives you away. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And Joseph, he was faithful to God because God was faithful to Joseph. And Joseph was confident in God's plan and in God's purpose in a life. I'm sure it was easy to stay faithful to God whenever he was the favorite at home. I'm sure it was easy, like, God, you are awesome. I love this life with you. Thank you. It's probably a little less easy, a little harder to be praising God and put your faith in his plan and his purpose whenever you're thrown into a pit and left for dead and then sold into slavery. Probably not as easy to trust God and have faith in him. But get this, in a life marked with jealousy and hatred, God is present. And in a life of ups and downs, God's working out his plan. And in a life of confusion and betrayal, God is faithful. And it's easy for us whenever we're in a pit, right? Whenever we're in the valley, whenever we're in the low times in life, it's easy for us to say, God, what did I do to deserve this? Why not that person? What did I do to deserve this horrible time? I didn't do anything to deserve it. But if we could take a step back, and if we could see things from God's perspective, because do you think when Joseph was thrown into a pit, God was like, oh no, what am I going to do? How am I going to work this out for his good? When Joseph was sold into slavery, that didn't surprise God. He had the plan worked out the whole time. And Joseph did his best to keep a God view and a God-centered perspective on life. And if there's something that we could learn from Joseph, it would be that, to keep a God-centered perspective and to zoom out as much as you can to see things the way that God must see them. And that's impossible for us. It's impossible to see all the workings and all the inner minglings that God is doing in our lives. And we get so caught up because we're so selfish. We're like, God, why is this happening to us? And maybe you have a life full of jealousy and hatred. Maybe you have a life of ups and downs. That's everybody, guaranteed. Maybe you have a life that's been very confusing and you've experienced a lot of betrayal. And maybe you didn't do anything to deserve it. And maybe you made some wrong decisions and now you're reaping the consequences of those bad decisions. Maybe somebody did something to you to cause the pain and the hurt. There was also somebody else who was stripped of their clothes. And there was somebody else who stayed faithful in the midst of persecution. And there was somebody else who ends up becoming the source of salvation for the very people that persecuted him. Do those things from Joseph's life sound familiar? It sound like somebody else's life that maybe you've heard of? It's the life of Jesus. And in the moments where you're experiencing the jealousy and the hatred and the confusion and the betrayal, and whenever you're going through the ups and downs of life, once again, maybe you didn't do anything to deserve it. Maybe you did. Maybe you're reaping the consequences. Maybe somebody did something to you to cause it. You can look to Jesus. You can look to Jesus in every circumstance. When you're in the pit, when you're in the palace, you can look to Jesus. He's the one who endured all the pain and all the suffering for you. And he's the one who was mocked and beaten and killed so that you could have a relationship with the Father.
We hope that you've enjoyed the message today and that it will be a source of encouragement to you this week. At Champion Forest Baptist Church, we desire to help people make sense out of life through Christ-centered living. And that's because with Christ, we have hope and true satisfaction. The Bible clearly states that all men have offended God by worshiping things he created instead of him. We have chosen to reject his authority in our life and look for satisfaction in things he created instead of him, which is ultimately pointless given that he is truly the only thing that can satisfy us completely. He is the perfection of everything we seek. The problem is, though, that once we have sinned against him by turning to these other things, A gap is created between us, not allowing us to access him anymore to find this satisfaction. God's character demands that our rebellion be accounted for before he forgives us. And this is the beauty of the message of Jesus. Christ is perfect in every way. He never rebelled against God, and he took upon our punishment on himself so that we could be reconciled to God and be fully satisfied in him, gaining eternal life. We need Jesus because without him, we are without hope, both in this life and for eternity. Turn to Christ alone for forgiveness and find satisfaction fully in our great God. Once again, thanks for joining us today, and we hope to see you soon.